Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
One, two. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast fueled by Zyrtec and Flonase. No, that is not a commercial. That is because I am just stuck with my allergies as nature has done its best to explode with its fertility and its little pollen sperm is all over the car and the streets and everything and in my nostrils and making me sound this way. So one person who is
spores.
That's the spores are in me right now. One person who is immune to spores is Mr. John Cimino, who is at the other end of this lovely microphone here, all the way from Waltham, Massachusetts, the man who never sleeps. Johnny, what do you sleep like, a half an hour a day? People don't believe this, but...
No, Mitch, actually, you can attest to this. I only sleep like 3 to 4 hours a day every day, and I've always done this. I've been built that way. And, Mitch, I sometimes get bored at night. You know, that's when I do my writing and stuff, but I'll text Mitch because I know he's sleeping usually at 3.
Yeah, that's what most people do at 3 in the morning. Most people sleep, yeah.
But here's a funny story about that. I used to do that a lot to Joey Caramagna, our buddy, and I think it was at Terrific Con 2000.
Wait, Joe Caramagna, he of the famous lettering ability and then moved on to writing such great books as, what the hell does he write? DuckTales.
He did Iron Man for a little while. He did the Marvel
Super. He did a lot of the kids' books.
Yeah, a lot of the kids' books.
Okay, so let's set the setting. It's 3 in the morning, and you're bothering Joe Caramagna instead of me. And what do you do to Joe?
And as you know how much I love Joe. Joe's one of my best friends, and I love to send him love letters. And I would send him, like, I love you, or I'm thinking about you, I want to touch you tonight, like shit like that. And he comes up to me at Terrific Con, like I said, I think 2015 or 16. I think it was 16. And he said, John, you have to stop texting me again. And I was like, why? I go, I got nothing to do. He goes, my wife saw those texts, and it was a girl that was texting me. She thought he was having an affair. So I had to stop, and I said, oh, I'm sorry. And then in 2000, when was Dan Slott there? 2016?
It was the year with the Spider-Mobile, because we had to get him out of that thing. And yeah, 2016, yeah.
Well, I was next to Joe and Dan Slott, and Joe's wife was there, and I had to attest to her, and I said,
that would be Amy Caramagna.
Yeah, so that was funny. So I do not sleep, Mitchie.
No, you do not sleep, as most people do, at 3 o'clock in the morning. And now that Joe Caramagna, he of the King of the Donuts, is now relieved of this duty, I have picked up the baton, and I often get those 3 o'clock in the morning texts because I'm often up worried and thinking about Terrific Con and how to make it better. But no, now I just turn the phone off and go to bed because I'm not going to put up with this. Anyway.
Yeah. You've done that to me, Mitch. Like, I will call you once, yeah, and then I'll call you again, and then all of a sudden it goes right to your message, and I said, the bastard, shut up.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, don't take it personally, but nothing offends you. Speaking of one of the things I've been working on, first off, before I go any further here, today is Tuesday, May 15th, when the people are listening to this and we're recording it, and the comic book world, the fanboys around the world are suffering right now because they just heard the news happened yesterday around 11 or 12. Yeah, it was about 12:30. I was walking the dog. The news that Margot Kidder, actress and famous Lois Lane for so many of us who grew up in the 70s and the 80s, had passed away at the age of 69. So I would be remiss if I did not mention her on this show because to so many people my age, which is old as the hills now, she is Lois Lane and always will be for her feistiness and her go-get-em attitude. And she was kind of 70s chic sexy back then. That was with the
she had the looks,
you know. So
she was actually really pretty in Amityville Horror. Remember she did that?
Yeah, I was thinking about some horror movie she was in. That's right. She was in Amityville Horror with with Thanos' father, actually, James Brolin. Brolin's dad. That's him, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Yeah, Lois Lane and Thanos' dad.
Handsome guy.
Brolin, yeah, he ended up with Barbara Streisand. I believe that's his girlfriend or wife.
Yes, oh, my God. Yeah. That's so weird. Oh, my God, that was Josh Brolin's father.
I know Josh Brolin's dad more than I did Josh Brolin growing up because he used to be on a TV show. Oh, I can't remember. It was really popular. I don't think it was the Streets of San Francisco, but Brolin was on some TV show.
No, Streets of San Francisco was Michael Douglas.
But Brolin was something. He was on some show. Well, I remember James Brolin. He was in a movie called The Car, which was like Jaws, except it was a car, and it would just come after you, and you had to kill it, and it was in Sense Around, which...
Not to take this into a Josh Brolin...
I know, suddenly we're on Brolin. We started off with Margaret.
Hold on, hold on. I got a question for you. What do you think Josh Brolin is going to be most known for the rest of his life? The older brother on Goonies, Thanos, or Cable?
I don't think he's going to be known as Thanos so much because his face is so much makeup, you can't really see him too well. Cable is about to come out in 2 days, so that might be... Actually, when I think of him, I do think... Not that I think of him often, you know, like in the shower or something, but when I do think of him, I think of him as the kid in Goonies, and he did a great movie, No Country for Old Men. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
With the guy that was killing people with the cow puncher, the thing that they kill the cows and the sheep with, that metal bolt that goes into your head. He was the sheriff in that movie. So I think of him. And plus, he was in Sin City, too, you know.
Yeah, he was in a lot of stuff. But everybody will always, that I've talked to, be like, yeah, that's the kid. That was the older brother in Goonies. Yeah, that's the older brother in Goonies.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know. Maybe he will be known as Thanos, though. I don't know.
We got to go back to Margot, though. We got to give her a little
fill. Yeah, we're going back to Margot Kidder, though. Out of all the Superman movies, I actually think she was pretty good in all of them. There wasn't one that stood out more than the rest. But the first movie, obviously, when she falls from the helicopter and he catches me, and she's like, who's got, he goes, don't worry, miss, I've got you. And she's like, got me, who's got you? That's a great line. I've seen that played on the local news a lot last couple of days. And then, of course, he goes flying with her through the skies Metropolis, New York.
That was good. But she, not from her looks, after the 70s, like her looks started going downhill because she started getting into hard, hard drugs. And here's a question I have for you, Mitchie. She was having a lot of problems in Superman 4 because which of her drug problems.
Or 3, actually. They wrote her out of 3.
Was it 3? Because a lot of scenes were filmed without Christopher Reeve. Like, I mean, I think that was in Superman 4. I don't know. But
the one where she leaves and she goes? She like won a trip to like Tahiti or something, and you see her in the beginning of the movie, and she's like, "Hey, everybody, I'm out of here. I won the lottery." And she pulls out a bikini and she goes, "I'll see you later." And then she takes off in the beginning of the movie and doesn't come back to the very last scene. I think that was Superman 3, actually. She's back in Superman 4.
No,
you're right. You're right. You know what? You're right. She leaves in the beginning of Superman 4 because Lacey...
Hemingway
is the actress in that one. What does she play? Lacey Lane or Lacey White? Isn't she like Perry White's daughter or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Lois is totally out of that one.
And then she got into drugs, too, didn't she?
Why? Because he goes home into Smallville in number 3, and Annette O'Toole plays Lana Lang, and she's kind of like the girl interest in that one, you know, the love
and
interest.
She actually played, that actress actually played
Annette O'Toole played the mother on Smallville, which is weird. But anyway, we keep going off of poor Margot Kidder. She's the one that died, and we're talking about everybody but her.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember her. Here's a weird movie. I saw her in a movie with Richard Pryor, and it was called Some Kind of Hero. And he was a returning veteran from the war. I think it was Vietnam War. And she was a hooker. And that was the whole movie, though. It was like, you know, interracial relationship was kind of a big thing in the early 80s. And she was a white
prostitute.
Oh, no. It was a big thing. She was a white prostitute. And he was this local hero. Yeah. Some Kind of Hero. All right. 1981 or two, I'm going to say. Probably 82. Richard Pryor was still a big thing back then.
Yeah. So,
but he's gone too now. Wow. Getting old, Johnny. Getting old.
Is Otis gone? Is
he No. Ned Beatty's still alive. Oh, from the original movie, there's Ned Beatty and Gene Hackman, but they're both retired.
Yeah,
they don't work anymore. And then, of course, you got the villains. You got Ursa. Sarah Douglas is still around. She does conventions. Jack O'Halloran, who played Nan, the big guy, he's still there. Terrence Stamp, who was General Zod, he's around. Jimmy Olsen's around. He had a little bit part in the Justice League movie. Did you notice him there?
No.
He was the prison guard when the Flash went to go visit his dad.
Oh, you know what? I do remember.
Well, he doesn't have the curly hair anymore. He's bald, so, I mean, you know, he got old. And, I don't know, Jackie Cooper's dead. A lot of them are all gone, man, so. Marlon Brando's gone for years, actually. Things change, man. That's what happens when you keep getting older. But Lois Lane, she was very fun. I remember she was very, at the time, she, you know, took no guff, cigarette smoking, hard drinking, tough girl, you know what I mean?
But when you watch the outtakes of, like, her and Christopher Reeve, you can see that they had such a great chemistry together.
Yeah.
And it worked. And because there were some other actresses that maybe were a little prettier and all that, but for, it just did not, they just, you know, obviously Superman is about Superman and Lois. That's the core of the, all the Superman stories. But, and they had an unbelievable chemistry. Yeah. I got to give them that.
Yeah, no, and then in number two, when they got married and that whole bit there at Niagara Falls, that was cute.
Did they say how she died, Mitch?
No, unless something's changed since yesterday. All I said was I heard she was found unresponsive and not breathing at her house in Montana, I think it was, and that was it. I mean, 69 is not that old, but she also, like you said, before the drug problems, she was into a lot of cocaine and stuff back in the 80s like everybody was. But there was, she also suffered bipolar disorder, and she, she was homeless at one point. I remember they found her outside unconscious and stuff.
But in the ending of her life, she was making the circuit. She was at a lot of
shows. Yeah, she was at a lot of, she was at Super Mega Fest. I remember that back in 2007. I remember
that. That can do a toll on you.
Yeah. Oh, Super Mega Fest. Yeah. And then she was actually going to be in Long Island in about 3 weeks. I was going to go see her at a show called Eternal Con, which is out there in Nassau County. She was supposed to be one of the guests. And here's a little known secret about Terrific Con. I was actually looking at getting her last year for this year's show because it's the 80th anniversary and the 40th anniversary of Superman. But I could not book her because she was already booked for another convention that has exclusive contracts and nonsense like that, so they was unable to book her for the show.
I remember you telling me that would have been pretty cool, though. I mean, it would have been good to see
it. Would have been nice, but you know, a lot of things. Last year we were supposed to have Adam West and he died. You know, people, things change. You just don't know.
Our heroes, think about it. Our heroes are getting older. I mean, like the ones we grew up
Carrie with, Fisher's like, gone. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I don't know. See, now we're sounding like old people.
Margot's kidding, though. Margot kind of hurt me a little bit because you feel a piece of your childhood go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird when those movies come on now. I was thinking about that. That was my thought. Like when, because Superman's on a lot. Like I'll watch TV and you'll see it on some of the channels late at night. And I'll see it. And now you'll sit there and watch and go, oh, everyone's dead. You know? It's really sad. You go to watch these movies and they go, oh, there's Star Wars. Oh, yeah, Carrie Fisher. Yeah, she's not here anymore.
This actually leads me into a question I want to ask you.
What?
Death of a celebrity death hurt you the most?
John Belushi.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah. I was in high school.
1982?
Yep, in March, March 5th, I came home. It was a Friday afternoon. I'll always remember that. My sister was listening to her radio in her room, and Imus, Don Imus, who's a disc jockey here in New York, he just retired too, he was on the radio or something, and he was talking, I'm sorry, she was listening to the radio. It was 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and she said, hey, I think they just said John Belushi died. I said, oh, shut up, you don't know, because at the time he was 33 years old, and I'm like, nah, you don't know what you're talking about. So I put the TV on, and there was a show in New York, WNBC in New York, called Live at 5. And there was the local newscaster, Sue Simmons. And she had Don Imus, who was from Imus in the Morning. And he was on talking about somebody. He's like, oh, yeah, he was a great guy. He used to drop into the studio now and then. And we used to, you know, joke around. I just can't believe he's gone, such a young guy. And I'm like, who? And they announced it, and it was John Belushi. And I cried like a baby. I was like, oh, no, because I had the Blues Brothers posters, the albums, Animal House poster. He was my guy. He was the funniest guy there ever was John Belushi. And I remember my dad coming home, and he loved Saturday Night Live and that stuff, and he was so mad about it when he died. And I remember my father to this day just, like, slamming his dresser drawer. He was getting ready for work, and he was looking for socks. And he was just mumbling to himself. And they came out and they said they found drugs at the scene of John Belushi's death. And my dad goes, see? See what these damn drugs do? This is what happens. You ruin your life. We're 33 years old. What a waste. And he goes, just keep away from that crap. And he was so mad about it. And I was like, I think that's what set me on the road. I never touched any drugs. To hell with that nonsense. Because I was like, wow, look how mad my father is about this stuff. So. That was it, John Belushi. And then for years, the thing about him is you sit there and you see how many drugs he was on, because I read the book that came out called Wired.
Yeah.
I saw the stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, and, you know, when does he become a drug addict? And I remember talking to people years later. They go, dude, the guy was always a drug addict. I go, no. He was just doing it for fun, and the girl shot him up when he was unconscious. This Catherine Evelyn Smith was her name, and she got convicted for involuntary manslaughter. She was like a groupie, and she's the one that shot him up with the speedball that killed him, which was the heroin. And
he was on that.
Because when they did the autopsy, I remember they had like drawings. He had so many pinholes in his needle marks in his arms. It wasn't just
one. He was also a food addict too. He had problems with food, like.
Yeah, a lot of us like
that demon in him. You know?
Yeah, well, the thing of it is, though, I read all his books. I read about his. I met his widow, Judith Jacklin, in Martha's Vineyard. We used to go there. In fact, there's pictures of me. I would always stop by his grave in Martha's Vineyard because we used to go there a lot, and that's where he used to live, and they buried him there. And I would always take a picture next to his gravestone. I don't know why. It's very odd now that I think about it, but there's all kind of pictures of me hanging out by Belushi's grave. And, actually, that's not the real plot. They had to move his headstone closer to the road because so many people were coming to the graveyard, and they were afraid somebody was going to dig him up. So they actually moved his body to an unmarked grave, and his headstone at the front of the road there is not really where his body is. Yeah. So anyway, the thing of it is about him, I was saying I read so much about all the drugs he was on. And this guy was, you know, he grew up in the 70s, you know, there was cocaine everywhere. And
oh, my God, yeah. You know,
but he was an athlete. This guy, you look at his career, he was a football player. He grew up Albanian household in Wheaton, Illinois, out there near Chicago. You know, good kid. You look at his life, good all-American kid. But I don't know, somewhere along the line took... I don't know how it starts, man. I don't know if it's
the fame. John Belushi was before my time. I never appreciated John Belushi when I got a little older. I was never a huge Blues Brothers fan. I know it was good, but you know what movie I love that he did? What was that movie he was always trying to win the affection of that girl?
Oh, that's Continental Divide with Blair Brown? When he plays a reporter. That came out, that was playing when he died. I remember that was in the theaters when he died, and that people went to go see that movie.
I remember that was like a good movie.
He was trying to be serious. He was trying not to be the big you know, out of control.
I don't know if you know this, Mitchy. You involuntarily brought John Belushi back to Margot Kidder, because wasn't Margot Kidder doing that SNL sketch?
Oh, the famous sketch with the John Belushi's the Hulk?
Yeah, he was the Hulk. And there was
Garrett Morris is the Ant-Man. Yeah.
Yes.
And the Flash
and
is Dan Aykroyd.
I remembered that because I was being a big Hulk fan, and I remember him like Superman squeezing his hand and like, oh, they were playing that. It hurt, but yeah, that was a memorable sketch.
Oh, yeah. And then I remember the Hulk comes out of the bathroom, and they're like, oh, my God, did something die in there? Because what do you expect? It smells like roses or something? Because he just stunk up the bathroom. And Bill Murray was Superman in that movie.
Yes!
Yeah, yeah. Bill Murray. Yeah, the whole cast. That was one of the classic Saturday Night Live sketches from back in the day. Because that was the first time you ever saw Ant-Man. And before the movie that just came out, there never was an Ant-Man live action.
And The Thing was in there.
That's right. The Thing came in there.
And Spider-Woman.
And Invisible Girl. Because I remember he goes, if the Invisible Girl's got to use the bathroom, she should lock the door. I remember that. Because one of the guys walks into the bathroom and you hear a girl screaming and he comes running out. And he says she should have locked the door. Yes, you're right. Spider-Woman wasn't that with the authentic Spider-Woman costume. Weird.
The 70s Spider-Woman costume.
Yeah, but it was such an obscure... Because John Belushi was on Saturday Night Live from 1975 to 1980. He was out of there in the 80 cast. That's when they started getting people like Eddie Murphy and all those people started coming in around 81. But so that had to be 19... That sketch... I'm going to say it was 1978, maybe?
78, 79. Let me throw a little comic history here. The reason why, if anybody remembers why, She-Hulk and Spider-Woman and Ms. Marvel all came into play was because the Hulk TV series was huge. You know, the Lou Ferrigno, Bill Bixby, and they were trying to do Spider-Man. But what they would... Well, Marvel was trying to push their properties into primetime. And what they were afraid of is that somebody was going to come up with Spider-Woman or a girl Hulk that they wouldn't need Marvel. So that's why Marvel put out those comic books.
Oh, that's why there was suddenly a flux of all those women versions? Oh.
So they were pushing those characters. And that if anybody remembers a lot of the premiums, the 7-Eleven stuff that was out at the time, even the stickers, they called cereal boxes, you would see a ton of Spider-Woman. Because Spider-Man was so big. But that's why they were using Spider-Woman at that time, because she was actually pretty big in the Spider-Man, like, in Marvel. So, because they were pushing her to try to have her to have, like, a live-action series and all that. But that's why you would say now, that's obscure, having Spider-Woman. But she was big at that time.
No, and you know what's funny? Just real quick, talking about Spider-Woman, I announced one of our guests yesterday. I'm about to put another one up in a couple minutes. Paul Soles, who was the voice of the original Spider-Man in the 1967 classic Spider-Man cartoons, the one that we all watched and got mad because the webbing was only on his mask and not over his chest. It used to drive me up a wall when he saw that. And then it's funny, the Mego figure came out and the webbing was on his body but not on his face. So...
Yeah.
But I read yesterday when I was putting him up on the Facebook page, the announcement, I was looking at some of his credits. It said that he appeared as Spider-Man two times in the 1978 Spider-Woman cartoon, and he's uncredited for that. I said, I did not know that because I have not watched those cartoons. I know you own them, but I'll have to see if the voice was the same, and it was the original Spider-Man.
Okay, let me tell you once again. They were pumping Spider-Woman out, you know, like in 79, all that stuff, and that's why the cartoon came out. Yeah, and I'll tell you why that's also very interesting that Paul Soles did that. Yes, Spider-Man had yellow eyes in that. He had yellow eyes in that cartoon. He
was I think I remember this now. I do think I saw this.
Okay, he appeared in two episodes, Spider-Man. I didn't know Paul Soles did it either. I mean, I
didn't know until yesterday. I saw it.
So. Yeah, when you're a kid, you don't put two and two together. But I'll tell you this: why that Spider-Man appearance was very monumental. That was the last time Spider-Man ever appeared on a Marvel cartoon other than his own. Because I don't know if you noticed this, but he never appeared in any other cartoon that wasn't named Spider-Man, because up until Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, all the way, you know that Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes?
Yeah.
Avengers Assemble that's going on today?
Yeah.
That was the, because Marvel didn't have the rights to put him in. Because remember how Spider-Man's rights were everywhere?
Sony owned it, everybody. Right. Yeah.
So if you notice, any cartoon that ever came out of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, to 2000s, other than the, like I said, Avengers came in, was Earth's Mightiest Heroes. They didn't have the rights to put Spider-Man in because somebody else owned Spider-Man. And so his cartoon, he would only appear in his own cartoon, but he would never be a guest appearance in anything else. That's why all those superhero squads and all that stuff. You never saw
That's
Spider-Man.
Right. Spider-Man was never on the superhero squad.
You're right. You saw the toys and all that stuff, but he was never on. He was even in the comic books, but he was never in the cartoon. And that's why when Disney finally owned everything back, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes went away. And that was actually better than the current Avengers Assemble stuff that's going on today.
Right.
That's been going on for four seasons, which Spider-Man appears in it, and now they have Spider-Man, Web Warriors, whatever, all that hoopla.
Yeah.
But that's why you never saw Spider-Man in all those years. So that Paul Soles one, when he appeared in Spider-Woman, was the last time you ever saw Spider-Man in within 30 years. Isn't that what you see? It's something you never realize.
Oh, my God. So you're like your own Lois Lane doing investigative reporting. Look at that. We brought it full circle.
To Paul Soles.
And then the lost soul of Margot Kidder. We lost all that. And one day, what a 24 hours it's been. It's been a whirlwind of web-swinging Lois Lane information. Wow. And when I turned the microphone on, Amir, 26 minutes ago, I had no idea that this episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast would be so enlightening as it has been today. And you could hear the sarcasm in my voice as I say these things. But, John, that was remarkable. Thank you for shedding the light on the Spider-Man animation history. See, you didn't know anything. Also, you have to know that he was the voice of Hermie the Dentist on the classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer that came out. Everybody knows that. He's the dentist. And I don't want to be a dentist. Dun, 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 dun. No, I don't want to make toys. That's it. Herbie doesn't like toys. That guy was yelling at him, his boss. Hermie, not Herbie. I thought it was Herbie, but it's Hermie.
Oh, but you got to give Paul Soles some credit. What? Those are two historical
animated. Oh, actually, he's like legendary.
Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Rudolph is going to be forever, and Spider-Man 67 cartoon is that.
I have that box set. When that box set came out, I bought that thing. That even the box was nice. The little packaging. Oh, that's one of the best ever. Ever.
Ever.
Ever. Ever cartoon shows. And then even though we did the whole thing. I used the music when we tried to do that Spider-Man Human Torch thing. That dun, 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 boom, 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 boom. Great music on that cartoon, you know?
The Hulk one?
No, I'm talking about the Spider-Man one. Hulk's got good music, too, but the Spider-Man 67 cartoon.
It's got
a lot of bongo drums back then, you know?
Well, it's Sid Daly. Sid Daly was a big guy. He did a lot of, and if you go online on YouTube, you can
get all that music.
Seven music, and you hear all that. I mean, let's remember, because that music enhanced the animation so much, because it was always Spider-Man swinging.
It was very weak. I mean,
when you were a kid, they throw that music in there too, so it's like,
Trust me. And apparently he's the voices of Rick Jones and a bunch of other people on the Marvel Super Heroes 1966 show. He's a Canadian guy, eh? So he worked up there, and that's where those cartoons were made up there. About that. Anyway, what?
I would like to hear. I mean, I know he's like, what is he, in his 80s?
80s,
now?
Yeah.
I'd like to still see what his transition with voices, if he can still.
Oh, no. You know how you can tell how he sounds now? He what do you call it? He was Stan Lee or not Stan Lee, but he was Stan Lee, the pizza owner in the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk movie with Edward Norton. There you go.
So it's actually part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe because that one, right?
Because he played Stan Lee, who makes the pizzas that Bruce Banner delivers to Lou Ferrigno to get into that college, to get in there to use their computers to contact Mr. Green, I believe it was. Mr. Blue. So anyway, so Lou Ferrigno, who's also at Terrific Con this summer. You know, I had to sit down with you because I have to come up with all the panels now. That's what I'm working on right now for this year's panels, because I go over all the creator guests and I try to match them up because it's a once-in-a-lifetime pairing for a lot of these things, and the fans want to see this. Terrific Con has become legendary for its fantastic panels that we have with comic creators every year. So there's always a surprise. But one of them we have to definitely put on is Jim Starlin, Roy Thomas, and I got to go down the list of other writers and artists we have there, because we got to get a power cosmic panel up there, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And Mitch, you know, not to give anything away, but Mitch has been coming up with some pretty good ideas of what he wants. I mean, so let's just say Terrific Can is not just panels, and it's not just, it's a lot of fanboy stuff and a lot of fun little knickknacks that'll bring up. Like, people don't understand, like, we're going to be really celebrating the creators and stuff in many ways and many things. And it's going to be a treat. This year is probably going to be, since we have that new venue, right, Mitch? Bigger, better than ever.
The Expo Center, 155,000 square feet, up from 45. Yeah.
But people don't know what they're in for. It's not just a typical comic con.
No, it's not. It's a celebration. It's like a Woodstock. It's like a Woodstock for comic book nerds. That's what makes it different. I was having this conversation the other day with somebody, and why a lot of con promoters and organizers just don't get it, and their shows suck. Okay, there, I'm going to call it right out. I go to these shows like every weekend, and some of them are great, some of them are fun. None of them are terrific, but some of them are weak and empty because they do a cookie cutter format. They just think if they throw some celebrities up there, they just throw some tables up there, people are going to come and have a good time. No, it's become a fanboy flea market. If you don't have any heart, if you don't have any soul or passion for this stuff, if you don't really believe it, if you're not a true fan, it's going to show through, and the show's going to look like a quick money grab. No one's going to enjoy it. They're not going to care less if it doesn't come back. And that's the whole fun of it. That's why I actually sit here with you and other people and talk about this 24/7. And I sit there and I think about how people are going to react to it. Are they going to like the panel? Are they going to like the decorations? Are they going to like the displays we have there? Are they going to like the guests that I brought in? So I think about which guests I'm bringing in. It's not just open a checkbook and throw money at people and get them there. And everybody that's at that show is there for a reason. Everybody, there's a theme. There's an overall production value going on at that show for 3 days. It is a 3-day love fest. It really is like a rock concert.
You said something pretty interesting, like cookie cutter. You know, it's like this. It reminds me of the malls of America. Now, when we were younger, you would go to a mall and you would find different things in there. Then, as things became more corporate, you go to a mall in Massachusetts, you go to a mall in Tennessee, you go to a mall in
California. The same. Yeah.
It's all the same, correct. Same stores, same...
Yeah, that's not by accident. That's not by accident.
Right, but that's how the Comic Cons have turned into. It's just the same format that you see, and then, like, it doesn't work. The thing I love about Terrific Can is that the fact that it is, you can see that there's more imagination into it and there's more fandom into it. And I have to admit, not just Roy, but we hear it from all those creators. A lot of those creators come to you and they want to come to that show. They want, and you hear it like, that's a good show. And not to toot your horn or toot Terrific Can's horn, but we were talking to some people from CGC. CBCS, and they were in Oregon. I told you about this. Yeah, they were in Oregon, and he was talking, one of my friends from CBCS was talking to a bunch of, like, you know, people there, and they mentioned Terrificon. And people in Ohio were saying, yes, we've heard of that show. That's a really fun show. We're thinking of going there this year. And he called me up and told me about that, and I was thinking, you know what, that's something special. Because if you got people across the freaking country that are coming to this, and all those creators are enjoying it, it's got to be something different there. You know, they're not getting that at those other places.
You know what was funny? You say that. The other day I was looking at the Twitter, and I posted up something. I made a little graphic of Thanos from the old Marvel, I think Marvel versus Capcom game, or Marvel versus the Avengers. I don't know what it was. It was an 80s. Video game or something, and he was holding the Infinity Gauntlet, and it's flashing all the different gems and stuff. So I post a post up there. I'm like, hey, you know, everybody loves Terrificon, and if you love comic book arts, this is your dream come true. Look at the lineup we have. So I just started listing all the people coming to the show: Ryan Stegman, Charles Soule, Jason Fabok. That's the modern guys. And then I did the classic people: your Roy Thomases, your Jim Starlins, all those folks. And then a guy wrote back from San Diego, and he goes, just bought my airline ticket and bought my Terrificon tickets. Can't wait to come out to the show. And he's from San Diego. I'm thinking to myself, here I am, my whole life I've wanted to go to the San Diego Comic-Con. This guy lives in San Diego, and he's flying across the country to come to Terrificon. How weird is that? I'm like, that he lives where the biggest comic convention in America is. Yeah,
so let me answer this to you.
What?
Yours is a comic convention. Is San Diego Comic Con?
I don't know. I've never been to it. The name says it's a Comic Con, hence the name San Diego Comic Con. But from all accounts from people that have been out there, that is far from the truth. It's more of a big media commercial for all these movie companies.
But that's what all these other conventions are turning into, these media conglomerates that doesn't work, and people are getting turned off and they need an alternative. And I'll say this, Mitch, I'm going to toot a terrific kind of horn right here, that I'm saying that a Comic-Con of our size, we are probably the last legit Comic-Con out there that is our size. Now, there's some smaller shows that do just comics and all that stuff, but trying to go back to that form. But I don't know another show that really does it like us. And to be honest, that is why it's starting to kind of pop out of the crowd of all those conventions. And that is what the people who other promoters don't get. Why? Look about this. Let's throw a terrific stat out there. Last year, when we did Terrificon, there were six other Comic Cons going on at that time, or big shows. Boston had the Horror Con. We had almost, what, a 10-20% increase in attendance.
The
other shows did not. And we have our little network out there that we can get stats.
Oh, please. You know what's so funny? You said there's no other shows. I got to correct you on that, because I do model my show after two other shows in this country here, and they're also very cool. And then one of them's happening next month. That would be Heroes Con out in North Carolina. I think it's North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina.
Always does Saturday on there.
Yeah. That's one of the shows, because I'm looking at his postcard, and he's got – all he's got is comic book guys. It's Mark Bagley, Art Balthazar, Daryl Banks. I'm looking at the postcard. A lot of the folks are coming to Terrificon, but a lot I don't have too. But that show I've never been to, but Ordway went to it last year. He said that's a great show. It's all comic book artists and writers. There's no celebrities at all at this show. And another show that I really love is the Baltimore Comic Con. I went to that one a couple times. That one is also mainly focus on comic book artists and writers. And they started getting a couple celebrities over the last few years, but not a lot. They only get like three or four of tops. They had the same ones we had last year. They had Iron Fist and Colleen Wing there, Jessica Hennick and Finn Jones. But that's a good show too. So I know that show, that and Heroes Con, and I'm trying to think of any other ones I've heard across the country that just focus mostly on comic book people. I heard Emerald City's good. I've never been to it. I've heard good things.
What about Dragon Con?
That's a cosplay thing. That's really not.
Yeah, correct.
That's not a comic book show. But no. Hold on a second. I have my spreadsheet here, and I've been looking at the last 4 years of ticket sales since I started producing shows over at the Mohegan Sun, and I was looking at the numbers, and you are right. The numbers are going up. I was sitting there last night, and the funny thing is, I announced a couple celebrities already, Lou Ferrigno, Pom Clementif from Guardians, and I have a couple more to announce still. But you're right. It's just been comic book creators, and even with that, the numbers are still going up. I got 72 more ticket sales on Sunday alone than I did last year at this time. See, I track all that stuff. I'm on top of all these things.
And let's throw this out there.
And we the have creators themselves, like you said, the creators are coming to me. I actually had to turn away a couple people because I don't have enough hotel rooms to put everybody in. So I actually had to tell some people.
And we have our little staples there, like Jerry Ward will be there. Let's throw this out there, too. Roy Thomas, that's the only place where you're going to find Roy Thomas in New England is at Terrific Guy.
Yeah, and this will be Roy's, this will be Roy's third appearance at one of my shows because the guy loves the show. I'd said he's like permanent guest because he's like always there, you know?
Yep.
Roy.
What do you call him? Thamidus? What do they call Stan Lee?
I can't think of how to say it.
It's a Latin word.
Yeah. That he was like the permanent representative of the show.
Yeah, that's what really is a Terrific Con. Like he's like.
We don't want to get into details, but you and I are working on a very special event with Mr. Roy Thomas. That if you're going to buy tickets, if you haven't bought your Terrific Con tickets yet, buy a Saturday ticket. That's all we're going to say. Buy your Saturday tickets. I'm not telling them too much, but we're going to do something very special for Mr. Roy.
And I got to give something to Mitchie here. He came up with an ingenious idea that actually worked. It's going to work so well for that.
Oh, yeah.
What you did, it was fantastic.
And again, that comes out of being a fanboy. That comes out of knowing Roy's history, knowing his stories, his characters. Yeah. And knowing the man himself, and that's how this event comes up. It's not just like, oh, well, let me just get one of the big names from the comic books and pretend I know stuff. I mean, I'm on the floor last night, as always, reading my comic books, and I was just reading my Avengers Omnibus number 3, which pretty much is all Roy Thomas stories, you know? So, I mean, big old fanboy. I don't think there's a lot of promoters laying on the floor. Well, they might be laying on the floor. We've seen some of these people. They're degenerates. But I don't think there's anybody laying on the floor reading their comic books at age 51 years old.
But I'll tell you.
Laying on the floor.
It's funny. If another con would do what you got planned and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It would probably just be like Stan Lee and it would be like a money grab. This is a celebration for like the creators. It's a labor of love, and people will understand it, and it'll stand out, and it'll make things different, and it'll make the Terrific Con, more lovable, more people will come back next year. There's no doubt about it.
No, and then I'm working on another fan thing that I can't announce yet, but I will soon. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be able to announce it, hopefully, some big event we're doing surrounding an anniversary of a beloved character that also ties into Margot Kidder. And that's all I'll say. So anyway, come on, we got to wrap this up. It's 8:00. You got stuff to do. I got to go out there. What?
Details will be coming soon.
Details will be coming soon. And it's going to be an event that every single person at the show can participate in a historic record-breaking event, hopefully.
All right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Got a real mention.
Look at that. The P.T. Barnum of comic book conventions.
Look at that.
All right. This way to the egress, we're going to wrap it up. What do you say when you go through the egress, Johnny?
Well, first off, I want to say, with peace, I'm Okita. Bring me Thanos.
Yeah, you really want to do the Bring Me Thanos thing, don't you?
I still have a then he shows up, and that man is run. Bring me that up.
I'm actually going to see it again today. I'm going to the big IMAX screen. Yeah. No. My son's back from college, and he didn't see it yet. So I'm going to go see Avengers again.
Oh, you didn't see it? Let's go.
I know. Do you want to go see it? I tried to get my wife to go on Mother's Day. She wasn't having it. I'm like, come on. She goes, I don't want to see that. You want to see that.
Right. I've seen it 6 times, and it never ceases for the enjoyment. It's just always entertaining.
You know what comes out today? Black Panther comes out on DVD today.
Yeah, I'm picking that up.
What?
The DVD.
Yeah. So go get that if you haven't seen it.
The bonus feature has Don McGregor.
Don McGregor and Christopher Priest, two guests that you'll see at Terrific Con this August.
Okay.
All right. That's that, right?
And that's that.
And that's that. Goodbye.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the Terrific Comic-Con, Gamer-Con, and so much more. Thanks for listening.